This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon. We are at 4:06, and let's take a break from the world news and go a little local here with plants and things.
Oh, nothing political today.
No. I've been warned.
Well, thank you for listening today, and this is a gardening show, and if you have questions about anything in your yard, regardless of what I'm speaking about, you can interrupt and call and ask your question, and our number is 673-4464, 673-4464. And tell me what your problem is, and I'll try to figure it out sitting here in this booth while you're sitting at home, and I'll try to envision your yard and how wet it is and all that, and see if I can't tell you what the answer is. How's that?
Sounds good.
Fair enough, right? So welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening, all 2,000 of you or 20,000 of you or whatever it is out there. But it's raining pretty good right now, isn't it? When you can hear it on this roof.
No, that's
we're two roofs under the rain, and we can hear it.
It's a coming down. We can hear it in here.
Yes, indeed. Well, with all the rain that has finally hit Oregon, I mean finally, it took a while this year, we can easily see the low spots in our yards that need to be repaired prior to next winter. And it always happens because, you know, during the summer, during the spring, fall, you know, you're doing your yard. You're not paying much attention to low spots, high spots, or anything like that. And you're, you know, it's not, no big deal. But when it rains as much as it does, all of a sudden you go, whoa, where did all those puddles come from? How come my gutters aren't working and the downspouts are not?
Everything's plugged up.
Yeah, because everything's plugged up because of the leaves that fell into your gutters and you didn't clean them. That's one for thing. But you want to prepare for next winter and make sure that you do your minimal repairs so that you have proper drainage in your yard. And you thought your lawn was level or slope so that at least the excess water drained away. And now you can see those large puddles in the middle of the yard. And you go, whoa, I didn't know that was there. Well, you forgot that it was there last year, too. But
there's a pond out there.
There's a pond. Where's the ducks? No, they lost. That's right. But take note and prepare to repair as soon as it's dry enough, you know, like April, May, that's usually dry enough. And then unless we continue to have, you know, good rain, or maybe those new trees or shrubs that you planted this fall are under 3 inches of water and they're going to die unless there is some proper drainage. And maybe you didn't think about that when you were planting them because the ground was dry. And so you put one of those little dams around them so that the water would stay near the center of the stem or the trunk.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, you know, you plant the tree and then you build it up around there so that when you do water, the water stays in.
It's there.
Well, if those little dams are still around your plants, get rid of them. Smooth them out so that the water runs away because otherwise they're going to get
drowned.
Super soaked and they're going to drown and they're not going to do really, really well come next spring because they're saturated. Another thing to look at, retaining walls. Let's say you're going to build a retaining wall or you have an existing retaining wall. And every retaining wall needs a drain system behind it. So to take away excess water, especially if you're, you know, got any kind of a slope behind it. I have a whole mountain behind mine, so when we built it, we put, at least a foot of drain rock behind it with a drain pipe and everything else. We've never had a problem in 20-plus years.
Wow.
It's still there. The mountain's still there. Better still stay there because my house is right next to it at the bottom. But retaining walls are really important. They're nice. They do a good job and all that. But if water builds up behind the wall, the wall's going to fail. It's going to fail in the hydraulic pressure, since it's not moving anywhere, it's just building up behind the wall. It's going to kind of push things out. And I have seen walls that have fallen over. Even not just block walls, but or rock walls, but also concrete poured walls for some reason they didn't have adequate drainage or maybe no drainage behind them. And we had some monsoons and, you know, all of a sudden the soil gets so pretty soupy. And then pretty soon that, that big retaining wall, concrete, you know, concrete's not going to move, right? Until the water, which is more powerful than the concrete, kind of begins to tilt it. And that's a real pain in the neck simply because you cannot straighten a solid concrete wall up very easily.
Nah.
It takes some major equipment and hydraulic jacks and stuff like that to do stuff. So that just remember the retaining wall that has a good drain system. It takes away excess water, and it's just good. And you can drain it out on the end of it, wherever that end might be. Whatever you do, don't run it into your neighbor's yard. I had a client that we finished a job for here a couple months back. And as we were looking at the bare ground, we noticed that there was the house next door had run their drain pipe over onto their property.
Uh-oh.
And there was two drain pipes on their property right next to their patio and driveway.
What a mess.
Oh, yeah. Well, that got corrected.
I bet.
It was not a a pleasant conversation between them, I'm sure, but you know, it got corrected.
It's good for me.
Do not do that. Do not do that, please.
Okay.
Or your neighbor and you are going to have a very unfriendly relationship for many years to come. Because it's going to create a real swamp, and that's all there is to it.
You're leading me right into all these political statements, and I can't say anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just remember this. You just can't take some concrete blocks and stack them up against a slope and expect it to stay there and hold the supersaturated soil in place. It just ain't going to work. And if you lack the know-how to analyze or correct potential hazards, then hire someone with experience and know-how to do the job correctly, who can assess the situation and say, yeah, well, if this happens, and if we get X amount of rain over, you know, a period of 60 days, et cetera, if you don't do this, this is likely to happen. And it may not happen the first year out, but there's a certain weakness that's caused from that, and consequently, maybe it's the next year or the year after when you have a major fall on your wall.
Oh,
you
no.
Know? Yeah.
That would not be good.
No, it would not. So drain rock, of course, is a must. You build your wall, and what we did, my wall is, I think, about almost 4 feet tall, about 3.5 feet tall. And first thing we did when we got it built, we put about a foot of drain rock behind it, just inch and a half round drain rock. And it can be any kind of rock. But when you get the smaller rock, stay about an inch and a half or smaller, the water will drain through. It will dissipate. It will lose its energy, if you will. Mm. And if you have a perf pipe, you lay some perf pipe down, then put some more rock on top of the perf pipe. And so that rain will hit the perf pipe, and the perf pipe had little holes in it, perforated. That's why we call it perf pipe. And the water will go in there and drain out to the end. And as long as you got it running downhill, the water will run downhill.
All will be good.
Yeah, and that's not even political. That's just straight fact. And, you know, but if you don't know anybody that's done it, you could check your neighbor. Maybe your neighbor has one. Maybe you've got a street where there's a hill behind you and there's 10 houses on the street. You know, check what your neighbors have done. Have they had a problem? And, you know, even if they haven't had a problem, you should do it anyway, just because, number one, it looks good. It stops the yard, if you will, at a certain point, and kind of hides hides any slope that you find hard to landscape, or you know, you can put soil behind it after you've got the drain rock in it, and plant some ground covers or some flowers or whatever. It can be very decorative when the whole thing is done. So, but there are how-to books. You can go to the box stores, you know, Home Depot, and even Freddy's might have them, see, they've got sunset books or some other type of garden books, and they'll say, hey, how to build retaining walls. That'll be the title of the book, and it'll have color photos in there, and it'll give you step-by-step, this is what you do. Step one, you know, you level this area out, you do this, you put your blocks this way, these are the types of blocks that are available, and then you shop around and look at the local shops here, Willamette Greystone. There's others that sell block, and take a look at what they have, or call up a concrete company, ask them, hey, come on out, can you put a retaining wall in here? And if they're and most of them are really on the ball and say, no, we can't do that because the slope's too big, the slope's too steep. There's evidence of water having drained down here in abundance at one time. Mm. maybe you ought to do this or try this. But there is a lot of information out there. All you have to do is research it and see what's available, and that will cause no problem for you in the future if it's done correctly. And these books, these how-to books, it'll say retaining wall construction, or how to build a retaining wall, that kind of thing.
Where's my refund?
Yeah. We had break time yet or what?
Just about 2 minutes. You want to do it now?
I don't care. You're the boss.
All right.
You run the machine. I don't. I just talk.
Probably should do it before we get in trouble.
Yeah, okay.
All righty. Here we go. We'll be right back. Couple of minutes with more of Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
And it is. We're back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on a very busy Wednesday afternoon. A wet one indeed in the Umpqua Valley.
It is wet out there. So thank you for listening. And if you have a question, 673-4464 is the number that will get you right here. So anyway, I'm talking about the rain and drainage and things like that, and I just kind of finished up with the retaining walls. I mean, it's brief, but it gives you an idea, and that's what I only have an hour, so I can't do everything. But now when you are, and this again has to do with drainage and rain, etc., when you are creating planting beds or lawns in your yard, say you have a brand new yard with nothing there, always mound with soil to ensure that excess water drains away from the foundations or the driveways or the sidewalks, patios or whatever. You know, a mere 2 or 3 inches of soil, like in a lawn, is all that it takes in most yards to make sure that you don't have puddles. In other words, the center of the lawn is just slightly higher by, say, 2 or 3 inches than the edges of the lawn. And consequently, all that rain does not sit in the middle, does not sink into your lawn and create a swamp. Mm. It drains off. And hopefully if it drains off, it drains off into planting beds. And they're a little bit lower than the lawn. But in the middle of the planting beds, when you do plant plants, you want to also have a slightly mounded area in there so that excess water doesn't sit around the base of the plants. And it's just takes a little bit of extra soil and design and thinking about it so that down the road you're wondering what in the heck is wrong with these plants. I planted 16 of such and such and 8 of them died. Well, you go through a winter like we're kind of, it's almost normal, but you go through a normal winter, and there's a lot of moisture in that soil, and it's better if you can create a drainage to take away the excess. In other words, the excess is that which pools on top where you can actually see a pool of water sitting around your oak tree or your maple tree or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just figure it this way. The expense of soil is a lot less than, say, foundation repairs or water under your house, because I've seen these things in different yards where folks say, well, I need some help. I mean, I've been planting in this one area and I can't get anything to grow there, and I don't know what the problem is. So I go to their house, I look, and I see that their planting bed, their foundation planting, say it's a 3-foot wide bed right along the foundation of their house, is lower than the lawn. It's in the plants that they were planting is maybe 2 or 3 inches lower. So any excess moisture will naturally settle in that area. And what that does after a while, too, it also works on your foundation. It's detrimental to your foundation. Mm. The best of all the worlds is to make sure everything drains away. You're going to have enough moisture as it is. And like I say, the expense of a little soil is a lot less than a foundation repair or water under your house. You know, I've spoken, well, I get all this water under my house and look in the crawl space, and by golly, there's 2 or 3 inches of water in there.
Gross.
And it's June. and that came from the rain of the previous winter. And simply because their downspouts they just kind of ended and flowed right into the foundation and or under the foundation. And after a while, the soil or the whatever structure you have, even if it's rock, it will settle after a while. It does settle, and if the foundation drops an inch, you see a real difference in your flooring, your carpeting or linoleum or something like that, or if it's a wood,
might squeak a little.
Squeak a little, be a little loose. Exactly. Yeah. In fact, that happened to my deck that I had out front. It was good for like 20 years, but after a while I kept thinking, what the heck's wrong with this?
Yeah.
Well, it was very moist under there. Even when we repaired it and tore all the stuff off, it was very moist. So it had really never truly dried out, and there's no way a lot of water could go in there, but but what did get in there kind of softened everything up, and the concrete blocks had sunk, say, half an inch or whatever.
Just enough to
make it give as you walked on it, and consequently, the uprights that were holding the decking boards were rotting, but it was 20 years before it happened, but still, yeah. I had to replace I went ahead and replaced the whole deck.
That can't be cheap.
No, it isn't, and I did it with the Tektwood that doesn't rot and everything, and we made sure that we had, you know, good block and good foundational material, etc. So that's cool. That's what happens when you get you know. Okay, here's last. Well, not the last thought.
Well, I hope it's not.
I'm done. I'm out of here.
Now, Kyle?
Kyle's not here either. Think about this. When's the last time you checked your rain gutters or your downspouts? That's a big, big, big thing here. Are the downspouts plugged with leaves? I clean mine every year. Every summer, we clean them out. And it's amazing. It's amazing how many leaves and dust and debris gather in a gutter system over the course of a year.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And if you let it go 2 years, you really got a mess.
You got a big problem.
And you're wondering why is the water, you know, you see the water hitting your roof, and it's coming down your roof going into your downspout, but then it's coming out of your downspout down onto your deck or your porch, and that's because it's no drainage, baby. You got to make sure that in the fall, summer, whatever, whenever you've got the
clean
time.
Clean those suckers out.
Clean them out. And what we do is we hand clean them, and I've done it for a few clients as well. It's not something I want to do on a regular basis, but you get all the debris out, and then we run a high-pressure hose down that thing and clean it spotlessly and make sure that all the downspouts are working.
Yeah.
And with the high-pressure nozzle on there, you can actually stick it down the downspout, mm-hmm. and there's always something clogged up in there.
Sure.
You know, a couple of twigs go sideways, and then a couple of leaves get on top of that,
and then it starts building up,
and that's when your structural problems begin, because it's got nowhere to go except up and over, and that's not what you want to do. And I don't care if the trees are 40 feet away from your house. There's some of them going to get in there when the wind blows, etc. They're just going to do it. And and if it runs down, like, say, an exterior wall, you got some repairs you're going to do. Or it can even run down an interior wall. And I've seen that happen before.
Yeah, me too.
And then you got major damage and expense. So cleaning your gutter is a good thing. And it's just a lot of weight will build up in there in the gutter system. And I've seen them collapse because there was so much debris in there that, and so much rain at a certain time that it's only metal, and if it's all, you know, kind of old, mm-hmm. for a while, it just kind of goes whoop, and a portion of it just kind of goes downhill, and then the whole thing starts to go crazy.
Well, you mentioned the water on the interior wall.
Yeah.
That happened in my parents' bedroom.
Sure.
And Dad, Mr. Fix-It, he just put some caulking up there and some other stuff, and shoved some blankets and stuff on the wall, just hung them up there. No see, no go.
It worked, huh?
No. Mom was, never mind.
Oh, okay.
She was not happy.
All right. But, you know, these are the things, especially, and I bring it up because when it rains like this, this is when you see these problems pop up. And you go, whoa, why isn't that working? Why is that water coming over the gutter? Why is there a pool in the middle of my lawn? No wonder it's brown. You know, no wonder it's a weed patch instead of a lawn. And and also pay attention to your, not only your yard, but your adjacent neighbors on either side of you. Which way are their downspouts headed? Are they headed toward your yard?
Have you thought about that?
Yeah, and I have found that, you know, not a lot, but it happens. And you want to make sure that your client knows what's going on so they can talk to the neighbor and say, oh, by the way, I've got a water problem and your downspout's headed right toward my yard. Could you...
turn that sucker around.
Yeah, could you turn it around or put a, you know, piece of perf pipe on it and run it out toward the street? And it's a common occurrence.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Especially in older homes that have been older, you know, say 30 years, things wear out, and the next thing you know, you've got a water problem. So, anyway, just some hints to be aware of, and you're going, oh gosh, you created a whole bunch of work for me, just what I wanted to do. But
unless you want to do it by my dad's method,
yeah, don't do it by your dad's method. Please don't. You might be disappointed.
Yeah.
Well, I'll. I'm going to have a little change of direction here and talk about plants. You know, that's what this is, a garden show, right?
That's what they tell us.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about dahlias, and I brought a book with colored pictures in it so my cohort can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let me see.
They're pretty. They're long blooming. Dahlias are long blooming and are quite colorful. The flowers are outrageously beautiful. And they're very hardy. Zones that are included in them, not all dahlias will fit zone 1, and not all dahlias will fit zone 24, but that is the range from zone 1 to zone 24. We're like a zone 6 or 7 in our area, so a 1 is like Nome, Alaska, and a 24 would be... the middle of Costa Rica, maybe, or something like that, or a desert region, say the Mojave Desert, and that would be the hot end of it. But they grow. Not all of them will grow exactly the same way in those spots, but there are dahlias that are made or hybridized to grow in those areas, so they are a tough plant. People look at them and say, oh boy, that's so beautiful, the flower is beautiful, it must be hard to raise. No, not really, they're not. Some of them you can use them as shrubs, some of them are just like annuals. They bloom, they go, and we get a hard freeze, and they might be a borderline thing. We get a hard freeze, and they die down. But the cool thing about them is the next year they come back.
Come back up.
You know, and that's what's good about them. but really, they're easy to plant, and they're easy to grow. They're native to Mexico and Guatemala. I mean, they grow wild down in that country.
So they're like weeds there again.
Oh, yeah, they are. like a few of the other things I've talked about over the years. Yeah. But over time and much hybridizing, they've grown throughout the United States and used in landscapes as a perennial shrub. Flowers, of course, come in many colors, and the flowers are just... some of them are like 2 inches across, and some of them big as 12 inches across.
Wow,
that's a real range. And the color, I brought a magazine in here to show Dale. The different shapes of the flowers are unique. A lot of the flowers have two or three colors combinations.
That looks like a burning bush.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And they're I don't know how many varieties there are. I didn't get to that
there
point.
There is a lot of them.
Yeah, and this magazine I brought in, it's a landscape nursery magazine. Swan Island Dahlias is in Canby, which is north of us about, 100 miles maybe?
Yeah.
And somewhere in there. But they are the largest grower of dahlias in the United States of America.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, they're the largest
dahlia
farm. And they've been doing this in 1927.
So they know what they do.
They know their business, let me tell you. But like I said, over time, much hybridizing is out there. And you get all kinds of different colors, all different sizes, leaf shapes, rates of growth, some that would sit in full sun and just prosper and do really well, and some that need a little protection in the hot afternoon. And let's say you live in Bend, maybe, and you plant them in the yard, and maybe it gets 100 for a while, and it's pretty dry in Bend, and so consequently they might need a little protection from the sun, that kind of thing. But you can use them as shrubs. You can use them for cut flowers. They're They look good if you have a yard that's landscaped, and let's say you have mostly evergreens, you know, spaced out in the backyard or the front yard. Well, these would be a good plant to intermingle with them so that you have spots of color throughout the summer. And, you know, it just livens up the landscape a lot. They also make great cut flowers. Some dahlias have very long stem, straight stemmed flowers that come right out of the shrub. And those are perfect for cutting and putting in a vase and putting them on your kitchen table or your dining room table and enjoying them. And then some of them are really tight to the shrub itself, and they're more, well, they're just tight. They don't have a long stem. They have a very short stem. And those are the type that, you know, are good for yards. And they, like I say, they grow throughout the entire United States. And like I say, they're perennial in some places, and then they're year-round. Year-round plant in other places. It depends on the type of soil, the climate in your particular area. We have a very good climate for dahlias. These that we have around here that are growing in yards, they can put up with a light frost. They can put up with a 100-degree temperature in the summer. It doesn't kill them, doesn't set them back.
They like our climate.
Yeah, they do. This is a good climate because, like I say, the zones, the temperature zones, the climatic zones range from 1, which, like I say, Nome, Alaska, to the Mojave Desert at 24. So what's that?
Oh, I was China.
No. I don't know if they grow there, but they range from the plant itself will range from some that are like a foot tall to some that are up to 7 feet tall, and what's neat about the tall ones, they can be used as hedges or you know privacy screens, and while the smaller types are like I said used in as shrubs in planting beds. Or as potted patio plants, you know, on your deck, et cetera. They really brighten up the deck. They brighten up the patio, and the blooms are really numerous and long-lasting. So what more could you ask for? And they, of course, make great bouquets as cut flowers because the blooms last a long time. We got a break?
We do, and we had a call coming in, but they hung up.
Uh-oh. Don't hang up. Please call back.
What's the number, Mike?
673-4464.
There you go. We will be back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here in just a couple. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Yes, sir. We're back. 4:41 on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. And are we still talking?
Yeah, we're still talking dahlias. I've got a lot of information to, you know, it's not real hard to...
There was a case in California years ago, something about dahlias, the black dahlia.
Oh, I don't know what that was. Wasn't that a movie or something?
No, it was a murder of a woman. They called her the Black Dahlia.
Oh, well, it has nothing to do with my show.
No, no, but the name Dahlia just popped into my head. And that's
I recall that, yeah.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I've never seen a Black Dahlia. I don't know.
Hmm. There's nothing here?
No, there's nothing in that article. And like I said, oh, boy. Anyway, most dahlias are started from tuberous roots, and a tuberous root is like, you know, when you grow a potato or something that's underground, it's kind of that's a tuber. Well, the dahlias have tuberous roots, so it's not just like small roots that you'd find on a other kind of a plant.
Yeah.
So. You can dig them up if you're in a cold area. You can dig them up in the fall and storm in a dry place like a garage or a shed, and then replant them the next spring, and then
they're just good as new.
Just good as new. And I know one lady here in Roseburg. She was the president of the Douglas County Dahlia Society, and I built her in her backyard a huge dahlia bed out of concrete block, and that's where she grew all of her dahlias. And when we had a fair, when you actually could go to a fair look at the floral building, they all had all these displays of beautiful dahlias in there, and they were mostly grown by members of her dahlia club. And it's not her dahlia club. It's
right.
The dahlia club of Douglas County. But, man, was she knowledgeable. She, in her garage, she had boxes stacked to the ceiling with these tubers that she saved. She just grew, I don't know, thousands, but she grew multiple hundreds of these every year. And she had some permanent ones in her yard that she didn't dig up that came back every year and did the thing. So,
but none of them were black.
No, I never saw a black one. But every other color under the sun.
Well, yeah, look, there's a thousand colors, it seems like here.
Oh, I don't know how many colors there are.
I see pink, red, orange.
Oh, and they're multicolored as well.
Yeah, yeah.
They might have pink, orange, and red in the same flower. And that's what makes them so cool. And they're different shapes and different sizes. And this place up here in Canby, I'll talk about that in a little bit here.
Okay.
But, you know, when you plant the tubers that you saved from the winter, you replant them in the spring when the soil's warm. They like warm. And they like a lot of organic material in the planting hole so that new roots become quickly established. And you just don't want to dig a hole in the black clay and stick one in and expect it to grow. It ain't going to happen.
No.
No. And like when I say organic material or organic potting, you know, a potting soil mixed with some bark mulch, mixed with some peat moss, a little bit of sand, a little bit of topsoil, and you mix it all together so you can't tell where one ingredient stops and the next one starts. So, and that's the kind of soil they like. And that's what I've said for the last however many years I've been on this radio. Most plants will respond well in that kind of a planting medium. They'll put out the roots very quickly and grow. But you got to give them, these dahlias, you got to give them space to grow. Don't crowd them. Some grow 4 feet tall and need room to fully develop. So you put them like 4 feet apart. That's good spacing. And the smaller growing varieties that only grow, say, a foot tall, maybe a foot around, they can be closer. Or those are the types you might put in a pot on the deck, nice planter box or something like that. And they're fine. And then when you feed your dahlias, you don't want to overdo the fertilizer, but you put like a low nitrogen percentage fertilizer in around the plants, and then they really can handle the hot weather, the cold weather. They're healthy. They can remain in the ground as long as they're well fed and healthy. you'll have good success. And not, of course, not overwatered. But where the ground freezes hard, like, say, Bend, Reno, you know, and my in-laws lived right outside of Reno and in a high desert situation, 4,400-foot elevation. It snowed. It got cold. I mean, it would be zero for weeks, you know, that kind of stuff. They had dahlias that survived there.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so I know that they're tough. And then it would come back every year and look really good. But if you do store them, if you do dig them up, like I said earlier, keep them dry. Put them in a cardboard box. Keep them in a dry place so they don't get any excess moisture and rot in the box. And they're fine. Now, I found out there is also a tree dahlia that grows up to 20 feet tall.
Jeez.
20 feet. Now, I've never seen one.
Okay.
And I didn't even see a picture of one. I just came across
it. So it's all a myth.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
But it does grow in our climate. It fits in our climatic zone. But like I say, I've never seen one. I don't know where you get one. But it has lavender flowers with yellow centers in the center of that lavender flower. Yeah. It sounds beautiful. But a heavy frost will kill the top completely. You can take, then you cut the whole thing back down to the ground, and it'll grow back. Now, it's not a real landscape plant because it's kind of, leggy, and it just doesn't, it's more of a novelty.
Okay.
You know, when you see this, and the range said they grow from 10 to 20 feet, so
that's quite a range.
Yeah, that's quite a range for a flower, you know, So if you got one of these, if you ever found one of these, you just gonna cut it back in the winter and it'll grow from cuttings. You can take cuttings off of it too, off the top of it before it freezes, and they'll do well. And before the winter comes, and you're good to go, and you'll have a new crop for next year. And if anyone knows where anyone is, one of these are, I'd like to know. I'd like to see it. I'd like to take cuttings from it, for crying out loud.
Take pictures.
Yeah, take pictures, anything. But there is a nursery in Oregon that specializes in dahlias. It's just up the road from us, maybe 100 miles. They grow them, and every year they have the Dahlia Festival. And the name of the nursery is Swan Island Dahlias. And I think you can see it from I-5. I think it's visible from I-5. But there's something that's there. There's another flower farm up there that's very visible, and they grow bulbs. But anyway, it's located in Canby at 995 Northwest 22nd Avenue in Canby.
So that will be $55, please.
Yeah. That's okay. Put it on my bill.
Yeah.
Or you can call for a catalog at 800-410-6540. That's 800-410-6540. And they'll send you a color catalog and the prices and all that kind of stuff. You can email them or call them or send them a letter, and they'll mail you your dahlias fresh. But Swan Island Dahlias is the leading grower of dahlias in the United States of America, right up here in Oregon.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, right. And these guys are, they've been doing it since, like, I think 1927, when the great-grandfather, one of the older generations created this thing. And they also create, like, 10 to 15 new varieties of dahlia every year. Now, I didn't get any literature on how they did it or what their techniques were, and, of course, they didn't share that.
No.
You know, but they do create 10 to 15 new varieties every year. And the Dahlia Festival occurs in August and September. And you can browse through the fields. You can walk through the fields or buy plants, and they've got all kinds of things going. I think they have barbecues and all that kind of stuff. And they have people fly in from all over the world on Labor Day weekend, because that's when they have their cut dahlia display with more than 15,000 blooms on display and for sale. And they invite florists in from their region up there in the northern part of the state to come and put together these bouquets. And, you know, 15,000 flowers.
Something there for everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. And it's a wild place. I'm going to make it a point to go this year. I'm going to find out.
COVID be darned.
Yes. And I buy plants. There's a couple other nurseries up there that I buy plants from. So I'm familiar with the Canby area. So I'm sure I can find it. My next trip up, I'm going to locate it and just talk to them. And I want to see what they do. But 15,000 blooms on display, that is a whole lot of work. Mm-hmm. But as I said earlier, the business was started in 1927 in Portland on Swan Island. And that's why they came up with the name Swan Island Dahlias.
And it stuck.
Yeah, but they had to move their nursery to Canby in the Willamette Valley because of expansion in Portland at Swan Island. Because as World War II came along and there were ships being built that, they kind of took the edge off the beauty of Swan Island.
I would think.
You know? So they searched around and they looked for some land with some good soil and said, hey, this is where we're going to do our dahlia farm.
This is where we're going to stick.
Yeah, and they've been there ever since. But the place is worth the trip to Canby to really grasp the full scope of the many varieties available and give you great ideas for your home landscape as well.
So well, there you go.
We got a break.
We do.
You got your hand on the trigger there.
Trigger. Nope. We'll be right back.
Yes.
On News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All righty, we're in the home stretch.
Final segment of the Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
That it is on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
And I don't know if we have time for a question, but the number is 673-4464.
There you go.
We can maybe squeeze you in if you're really interested. But this week we are starting, and I talked about this, I think, last week or the week before, I can't remember. Our bare root trees are, we're going to pick up our first load here sometime this week or the beginning of next week. It's a little too wet to be planting them in your yard right now because it's pretty soggy and it would be a real pain.
It's just nasty.
It would be nasty. And it takes us a while to get them down here. We go pick them up. We go select them. We pick them up and truck them down and then
Then we line them out and get them priced and named. It takes a few days to get all that together. So they probably won't be ready for sale for another couple of weeks. And by that time, some major rainstorms have probably have already gone through. But we'll have the full complement of fruit trees. And so I don't know if about nut trees. I think there's several other places we have to go for nut trees. But we'll have new shade trees, new fruit trees, apples, plums, pears, cherries, and several varieties of each of those. So that's, as I said before, that's a good time if you're really interested in having a small orchard or fresh fruit to eat in your yard. Bare root trees are your best deal economically, because you get a pretty good sized tree right off the bat for half price of what they normally would be when they're potted up. So
can't beat that.
So when you stick a pot on them and put the soil mix in there and the labor, you know, the price goes way up. So that's how that works. And it's kind of interesting. I had a call from a client on Monday. She said, I have three fruit trees that I need pruned and I need an estimate. I said, oh, okay. And she gave me directions, and it's out there near the Callahan somewhere, up on the top of a mountain. I couldn't believe
it. Nice.
You know, the road was horrendous almost. Anyway, there was three fruit trees, and we talked around, and she said, oh, I love these fruit trees, and blah, 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 and she's talking up a storm. She said, oh, by the way, I bought them all from you. That's really, that's
nice.
Hey, okay. And I said, how are they doing? You know, are they producing a lot? She said, oh, yeah, a whole lot. And she's got a lot of fir trees surrounding, but she apparently gets sufficient sunlight in there to
overcome that.
To overcome that and then actually get fruit. She said the fruit's great. Oh. She had two apple trees and I think a plum tree. I'm not sure what the third one was, but she had two apples. And so I made arrangements to prune them, and we'll probably go prune them next week. And they've done really well. And she her husband built real wire cages around them, so no animal in their right mind could possibly get in them. That's for sure.
Yeah,
and each, you know, it's like a frame box with chicken wire all the way around it, and they're probably like 6x6 in size. With and he built a small gate so you could open it and she could get in and out and pick the fruit and all that. But she bought them bare root and planted them in good old Douglas County soil and took care of them. And I forget how long they've been in, 10 years, something like that. But
really?
Anyway, next week we'll start getting our trees out there.
All right. Where is your location?
My location is south of Winston, about a half a mile on Highway 99. And you can't miss us because all our roofs are green and a big sign says Wintergreen on it. So stop in to see us and we'll talk and we'll tell you what to do. Thank
Good
you
enough.
For listening.
See you next week.
Okay.